Our first teacher tonight is Brother Chuck Durant. Brother Durant is a member here at Fairview Memorial, a very faithful member. Here at Fairview Memorial, we love him, we appreciate him. We're thankful for the ability to teach that the Lord has blessed him with. And Brother Durant is one of the brethren that's on the Winter Bible Study Committee. And when we met this year earlier on to try to get select the teachers and the lessons and everything that we do, I think Brother Durant was pretty shocked when we chose him to be one of the teachers. But I believe that he'll do a wonderful job, and you pray for him, and we want to turn the service over to him.
I'd like to welcome everyone here tonight. Now I know why preachers always ask the congregation to pray for them, so please pray for me. I'd like to, before I get started, I'd like to thank Brother Moran for starting this work here at our church and for the Lord leading him, following his lead to start this, because I think it's been great for our churches to fellowship together and for our members to take part in this. So pray for our church. I'd like to mention the Bible Study Committee, Brother Ernie Sanford, Brother Mike Collins, Brother Joey Hayes, Brother Dallas Wheat, and then our pastor, Brother Jerry Miller. And last year, the Bible Study Committee decided that they would let lay people in the church teach lessons, deacons and Sunday school teachers and so forth. And I thought, well, that's a pretty good idea. But now I'm not thinking that that's such a good idea. The Bible Study Committee, I thought this year we had a really difficult time coming up with our theme. And it was kind of nice that we fellowshipped a lot together. We'd have a good meal before we'd meet. And it just seemed like it took us a long time to get that theme. And finally, Brother Joey Hayes come up with Crossing the Line. And I got to thinking that maybe the reason that we had such a difficult time is because we're Baptists and we like to eat. And I hope you'll enjoy our theme that we came up with, and that pray for us that we can get a lead for a theme for next year for our study. And I've already mentioned that we had a difficult time, but what does our theme, Crossing the Line, have to do with the Christian journey? And I got to thinking about that, and there were three things that came to my mind. When we chose Crossing the Line for our winter Bible study. First, God has drawn lines that we are supposed to cross, and the Lord may even place an obstacle in our way, but He still wants us to move forward. And then second, God will draw a line that we're to stay behind and our footsteps are not to cross. And then third, is a line, it's one that God has drawn that we are not to cross or we're not to stay up behind, but it's one that we're to follow. And I'd like to take a look at the first line and give an example of crossing the line that has been drawn. And title of my lesson tonight is Crossing the Line and Being on the Right Side of Jordan. And if we take a look at the example of crossing a line that God has drawn, during the spring of the year, the Jordan River was at flood stage. The Jordan was a tremendous barrier to the nation of Israel, and it blocked their way to the promised land. But nonetheless, Israel was to look to the Lord to overcome this obstacle so they could enter the land of Canaan. And we're going to take a little bit closer look at this event in a few moments. Now, the second line that I mentioned is one that God has painted that our footsteps are not to cross, but we are to stay behind. And let's take a look at Moses. Moses looked at crossing the Jordan River with anticipation. And in Deuteronomy, in the third chapter, in verse 25, Moses says, and he's speaking to God, he says, I pray thee, let me go over and see the good land that is beyond Jordan, that goodly mountain in Lebanon. But God didn't let Moses cross the Jordan. And why? In Numbers, in chapter 20, in verse 8, God says to Moses, take the rod and gather you thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes. And then going on in verse 11, it says, and Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beast also. And then going down to verse 12, it says, and Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly. I read that. Okay, 12. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. See, Moses crossed a line that he was supposed to stay behind. He was supposed to speak to the rock, and God penalized him for disobeying. And the third line is one which we are not to cross or stay behind, but it's one we're to follow. In the book of Joshua, in chapter 24, and verse 15, and this is Joshua speaking, and it says, and if it seems evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorite in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You see, Joshua chooses a path here for him and his family, and that path is to follow the Lord. In the very next verse, if you read that, you'll see that Israel says that they will follow the path, the same path, but it doesn't take them long to get off track. If you read further in that chapter in Joshua 24 and verse 33, we have some evidence of that, because it says, and Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died, and they buried him in a hill that pertained to Phinehas, his son, which was given him in Mount Ephraim. So the question is, what was Phinehas doing owning land? We see here that Israel has already strayed off course because priests were not to own land. Now, the psalmist said in Psalm 17 and 5, hold up my goings in thy path, that my footsteps slip not. The psalmist wanted God to guide his footsteps. In Proverbs 4 and 26, and I like this, it says, ponder the path of thy feet, and let thy ways be established. We need to pay attention to where our path will lead us. Now, I want to ask you a question. What does being on the right side of Jordan mean? Well, by crossing the line or the Jordan River, Israel would be doing the will of the Lord and be on the right side of Jordan. When we are out of God's will, we are on the wrong side of Jordan, and we're not where the Lord wants us to be. As members of the human family, we all have a free will and we can do as we please. Just because God allows us to make our own choices, it does not mean that God will always put His stamp of approval on what we do. Let's look at some examples of that, where God's people crossed the line and He allowed them to do so. If we look in 1 Samuel in chapter 8 and verses 4 and 5, if you remember where Israel wanted a king, then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah and said unto him, behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all nations. And then in verse 7 it says, and the Lord said unto Samuel, hearken unto thy voice of the people and all that they say unto thee, for they have not rejected thee, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. You know, Moses knew what the children of Israel would do, because I believe it was back in Exodus. He made provisions for how a king should act. Even though God didn't want Israel to have a king, He wanted a theocracy where He was in control and they were looking to Him. But Israel was looking to a king. But God, yet, He still allowed them to have a king. And then moving forward, let's take another example. We see that Israel crossed that line, but God allowed him to do it. You remember when Moses was told to speak to the rock, and he disobeyed God and smote it? Even though Moses disobeyed God, and he did he crossed the line that he wasn't supposed to. I want you to notice, if you that verse that I read, it said, yet water still flowed abundantly. Even though he disobeyed God, that water still flowed, so the children of Israel had water to drink. It shows the grace of God, how graceful he is to us, even though we cross lines that we shouldn't. If we take a look at folks like God's men, like Abraham, David, Solomon, and other men of the Bible, and these men of God had multiple wives, yet God allowed this to happen, but he didn't approve of it. God is for the family, and you can't give me one example in the Bible where a man had multiple wives where his family prospered from this arrangement. The tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh asked Moses for land on the east side of the Jordan River. You know, sometimes in our Christian walk, the grass always seems greener on the other side, and I'm sure it did to these 2.5 tribes. But even though, well, I'll just tell you this, and we'll look at that a little bit later. God allowed them to have land on the other side of Jordan, on the east side. And I'm sure that land looked very, very luscious and green and fertile and would be great for their crops to grow. And they looked like they could really prosper on that side of the Jordan. But we want to study about that in a few minutes. Okay, if we go to Joshua in the first chapter in verse 12, and it says, and this is Joshua speaking, it says, and to the Reubenites and to the Gadites and to the half-tribe of Manasseh spake Joshua, saying. And then in verses 13 and 15, Joshua says, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God hath given you rest and hath given you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you on this side of Jordan. But ye shall pass before your brethren armed, all the mighty men of valor, and help them. That was a condition to stay on the east side of Jordan, that they had to help their brethren who went over to the west side. And there were 40,000 of them, men of valor, that crossed over the Jordan to help their brethren fight. But I want you to think, there were still men of valor that stayed on the east side, because they had to protect their men and their women and children that were over there on the east side. And as I mentioned, God allowed the 2.5 tribes. Let's see what I said. Okay, and then it says, until the Lord hath given your brethren rest as he hath given you, and they also have possessed the land which the Lord your God giveth them, then ye shall return unto the land of your possession and enjoy it, which Moses the Lord your servant gave you on this side of Jordan toward the sun rising. So God allowed them to stay on the east side of the Jordan. Were they on the right side of Jordan? Well, as we'll examine that question a little bit later as we continue our study. But before we continue and we look at the crossing of the Jordan, we need to study a little geography. And I know most of you probably do not like geography, but I kind of like geography and I love history. And I have this little map right here. And the only thing that I really want you to get from it, and you probably can't see anything from it, but up here you have four rivers, which are the start of the Jordan River. And they feed into Lake Huli. And Lake Huli today is basically drained because the Israel people have drained that because it's fertile ground and they've used it for agriculture. And then from Lake Huli, the river goes into the Sea of Galilee. So you can see it's almost a straight line. And then from the Sea of Galilee, it goes down to the Dead Sea. And it's a straight line, and it's about 70 miles as the crow flies. But the Jordan River is cut in a huge, huge gorge. And there are a lot of twists and turns to it. And probably if you were to follow the flow of the river, it would take you about 200 miles. Now, it wasn't used in those days for commerce or for, they didn't navigate on it because you had 27 sets of rapids there. So it wasn't something that you'd get and take a boat ride all the way down the Jordan. Its width, it was probably about 80 to 100 feet in width. I've read one source that during the flood stage, it could be anywhere from a mile wide. Probably the depth of it during normal stage was probably anywhere from 3 to 10 feet. And probably the only time that well, I'll get to that in a minute. But during biblical times, no large city was ever built on the Jordan or on its banks because of the swampy conditions, the extreme heat, and there were a lot of wild animals in the area. In the book of Amos in chapter 6 and verse 14, it says, it calls it the river of the wilderness. In the New Testament, about the only time you hear of the River Jordan with any significance is with John the Baptist and also the baptism of Jesus. Now, if you'd like to read along with me, we're going to read in Joshua in the third chapter, and I'm going to start in verse 1. And it says, "And Joshua rose early in the morning, and they removed from Shittim and came to Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and they lodged there before they passed over." I want you to notice something there that I found really interesting, where it says, "And Joshua rose early in the morning." If you look in Genesis chapter 22 and verse 3, wasn't it early in the morning when Abraham rose up with Isaac and God tested his faith? In Exodus in chapter 8 and verse 20, but it was early in the morning when David left to fight Goliath. And it was in Exodus chapter 8 and verse 20. Moses was told to rise early in the morning before he went to speak before Pharaoh. And then in chapter 16 of Mark in verse 2, we are told it was very early in the morning when two women went to Jesus' tomb and they found him risen from the grave. The point I'm trying to make there, folks, is early in the morning God can do great things, and it's a great time of the way to get your day started by prayer and studying God's Word, and He can do great things. Okay, now in verse 2 of Joshua chapter 3, it says, "And it came to pass after 3 days that the officers went through the host." In verse 3, "And they commanded the people, saying, When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then you shall remove from your place and go after it." And in verse 4, "Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measuring, come not near unto it, that ye may know the way by which ye must go, for ye have not passed this way heretofore." That last verse there where it says, "that ye may know the way by which ye must go, for ye have not passed this way heretofore," I think that should give the children of Israel great excitement because something new and great was going to happen to them. And I want you to picture the ark, because that's very important here, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But there was supposed to be a space between the children of Israel and the ark, because the ark represented the presence of God, and they were supposed to have respect for God's presence. Now, speaking about the ark was a chest, and it was made of Shittim wood, and it was covered with gold on the outside and the inside. And the gold represented Christ's deity, and the wood represented his humanity. And we know that Jesus was both God and man. The ark represents God's presence, and it is a picture of Christ. When Israel crossed Jordan, it was a picture of Christ leading the way, and Israel was on the right path when they followed the Lord's lead. Now, we know we're on the wrong side of Jordan when God is not leading in our lives. It is good for us to remember that God has the lead and He is in front. If we're not following God, folks, we're going in the wrong direction. Now, in verse 5, of Joshua chapter 3, it says, "And Joshua said unto the people, Sanctify yourself, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you." The sanctification here is speaking of spiritual sanctification. They were to prepare themselves spiritually. And then when it talks about wonders among you, God is letting the people know, get ready, there's going to be a great miracle that takes place. God had promised them that they would see a miracle. In verses 6 and 7 it says, "And Joshua spake unto the priests, saying, Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass over before the people. And they took up the Ark of the Covenant and they went before the people. And the Lord said unto Joshua, This day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee." You see, this great event, this miracle, God is comparing it to the crossing of the Red Sea, and now He's going to allow the children of Israel to cross the River Jordan. And He is putting Joshua in a position that is comparable to Moses. Now, I want you to look closely at verses 8 and 10 with me. I thought these were really important and interesting. It said, "And thou shalt command the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, When ye are come to the brink of the water of Jordan, ye shall stand still in Jordan. And Joshua said unto the children of Israel, Come hither and hear the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, Hereby ye shall know that the living God is among you, and that He will without fail drive out before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Jebusites." By holding back the Jordan, God is showing Israel, and He's also showing the Canaanite people, He has control over the waters. You know, He showed them with the opening up of the Red Sea. He also showed them with the great flood. But He's putting His stamp on it right here with the Jordan River. And in biblical times, that had a lot of significance to these people that we wouldn't really understand, because in biblical times, it was common to obtain a judicial verdict of the gods by having the accused submit to a trial by water. So I'd hope that if they were trying me, that they really liked me and they threw me in the shallow end and the water wasn't rapid. Because if you couldn't swim, you were really in trouble. But they would throw a person in the river, and if he drowned, the gods had found him guilty. If a person survived, the gods had found him innocent. By passing safely through the water, God is showing His rightful claim to the land. Now I want to go over and read in Joshua in chapter 1 and verse 9 something that I thought was really interesting. It says, and this is Rahab speaking here, "And she said unto the men, I know that the Lord hath given you this land, and that your terror has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did unto the two kings of the Amorites that were on the other side of Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom ye utterly destroyed. And as soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt, neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you." So they understood the significance and the power of God by crossing the Jordan River. And it said there that they didn't have any courage. We'll talk about that in just a little bit more. But that verse proves God's rightful claim to the land. Joshua 3:15, let me go back over there. It says, "And as they that bear the ark were come unto Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of the harvest." And this is the time of the barley harvest. Can you imagine being those priests in this? You know what it's like to see a fast-moving body of water and how quickly it could take you downstream, the faith that they had to just step into that water and the miracle that was going to take place. And then in 16 and 17 it said that the waters which came down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far from the city of Adam. And I believe there's some significance there, because the city of Adam, isn't Adam where we all began? And that is beside Zaretan that those that came down toward the Sea of the Plain, even the Salt Sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed right over against Jericho. And the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan, and all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over. Well, folks, that to me is just a tremendous year. And what I really, really enjoy when I read that every time is where they passed over on dry ground. That shows how great our God is. Could you imagine the thousand of Israelites passing over a river, and God is holding back the water, and it's just heaping up and heaping up, and there's more and more water coming, and the snows are melting from the mountains, and it's just coming, and it just gets higher and higher. And yet, they passed over on dry ground. It would have to be dry ground. And why would it have to be dry ground? Could you imagine women and children passing over on a muddy riverbed, or them bringing their carts and their wagons over? It just couldn't happen unless it was dry ground. What a tremendous miracle. All right, now I'd like to go to the fourth chapter of Joshua. And Joshua, Joey, how are we doing on time there? Okay. In chapter 4, verses 1 and 3, it says here, "And it came to pass, when all the people were clean passed over Jordan, that the Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, Take ye 12 men out of the people of every tribe a man, and command you them, saying, Take you hence out of the midst of Jordan, out of the place where the priest's feet stood firm, 12 stones. And ye shall carry them over with you, and leave them in the lodging place where you shall lodge this night." Okay? That really has some great significance for us that we'll just speak about in a minute. But I want you to keep that in mind about those 12 stones. And then Joshua has gotten his instructions there in the first three verses from God. "Then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had prepared of the children of Israel, out of every tribe a man. And Joshua said unto them, Pass over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of Jordan, and take ye up every man of you a stone upon his shoulder according unto the number of tribes of the children of Israel." And then in verse 6 and 7 it says, "That this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, What mean ye by these stones? Then they shall answer them, that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord when it passed over Jordan. The waters of Jordan were cut off, and these stones should be a memorial unto the children of Israel." They were to teach their children about the great thing that God had done for them. And going on in verse 8, "And the children of Israel did so as Joshua commanded, and he took up the 12 stones out of the midst of Jordan, and as the Lord spoke unto Joshua according to the number of tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them unto the place where they lodged, and they laid them down there." And they lodged probably 5 miles from the Jordan, and it was probably about 2 miles from Jericho, and it was a place called Gilgal. Now I want you to pay close attention to verse 9, because it said, "And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests which bear the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they are there unto this day." Even though man couldn't see these stones that Joshua set up, we know that God could see them. Verse 10 tells us, "For the priests which bear the ark stood in the midst of Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to speak unto the people according to all that Moses commanded Joshua. And the people hasted and passed over." Remember that the Jordan River was at flood stage. God has removed this barrier, and he's allowed his people to cross. They haven't reached the finish line, because you see, when they get into the land of Canaan, the book of Joshua is a book of possession. They had to do something to possess this land. It would be a land of conflict and conquests. So they had to fight for their land, even though it was unconditional. God told them that they would have the land. It was still conditional that they had to do something for it. Okay, in verse 11, "And it came to pass when all the people were clean passed over, that the ark of the Lord passed over, and the priest in the presence of the people." We see the Ark of the Covenant finished crossing the Jordan with the priest, and we're going to go into that more in detail when we get to verse 18. Now in verse 12, it talks about, "And it came to pass, and the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the children of Israel, as Moses spake unto them." So the 2.5 tribes, as we spoke about earlier, they were to help the children of Israel possess the land on the west side of Jordan. Verses 15 and 16, it says, "And the Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, Command the priests that bear the ark of the testimony that they come up out of the Jordan. Joshua therefore commanded the priests, saying, Come ye up out of the Jordan. And it came to pass, when the priests that bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord were come up out of the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lift up unto the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned into their place and flowed all over the banks as they did before." And then in verse 19, "And the people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month." Well, that was significant because that was the day that they chose the land for the Passover, and they were getting ready for the Passover. "And encamped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of Jordan did Joshua pitch," as I already mentioned, "in Gilgal." And then in verses 21 and 22, "And he spake unto the children of Israel, saying, When your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, What mean ye these stones? Then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over the Jordan on dry land." They were to teach their children about the significance of this great miracle. It gets even better. Proverbs 21 and 22, in Proverbs 22, in 6, it says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Deuteronomy in chapter 6, in verses 7 and 8, and I really like this, and it says, "And these words which I have commanded thee this day shall be in thy heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto the children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest down in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up." They were supposed to teach their children 24/7. It was a full-time job to teach them about the Lord. They were to teach their children that the 12 stones that Joshua set up in the Jordan was a picture of the death of Jesus Christ, and that the 12 stones taken out of the Jordan were a picture of his resurrection. You see, they were to teach their children that the 12 stones that Joshua, I mentioned that, but God was showing, not only did he have the power to heap up the waters of the Jordan River, but he was showing that he had the power to raise Christ from the dead. When Israel taught their children about the Lord, they were on the right side of Jordan. Now, I want to move over to Joshua chapter 4 and Well, I want to finish up reading in chapter 4, verses 23 and 24. It says, "For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you were passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know that thy hand of the Lord, that is the mighty, that ye might fear the Lord your God forever." When it said there that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that ye might fear the Lord your God forever, God wanted every man and woman to have an experience like Rahab had back in Joshua 1st chapter, and I believe it was verse 11. I read a portion of that, but it said, and this is Rahab speaking, "For the Lord your God, he is the God in heaven above and in earth beneath." You see, God wanted everybody to know what he had done. You know, God many times has given a bad rap, and people look at the way he judged the Canaanite people, and they say that he judged them too harshly. But I want you to know that the Canaanite people knew about the power of God, and they had 400 years to repent and to turn to the Lord, but they didn't do it. But we see here's a woman that did. And that she turned from her sins, and we know that Rahab is in the lineage of Jesus Christ. What a tremendous story. And you know, she disobeyed the law of her land, but she saw a greater law. She saw the law of God, and she followed that, and she followed God. Rahab was on the right side of Jordan. Now, I'd like to take a little closer look at the 2.5 tribes and see if we can determine, are they on the right side of Jordan? And that would be the tribe of half tribe of Manasseh and Gad and the Reubenites. And it says in Joshua 22, verses 1 and 4, then Joshua called the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half tribe of Manasseh. And he said unto them, ye have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have obeyed my voice in all that I commanded you. And said unto them, ye have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have obeyed my voice that I have commanded you. Ye have not left your brethren these days unto this day, but ye have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God hath given rest unto your brethren as he has promised them. Therefore now return ye, and get ye into your tents and unto the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of Jordan. Joshua has gathered the 2.5 tribes and tells them they've done a good thing by helping their brethren. And he tells them they can return to their land on the east side of Jordan. And then verse 5, it says, but take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you, to love the Lord your God, and to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments, and to cleave unto him, and to serve him, and to serve him with all your heart and all your soul. Joshua is warning the 2.5 tribes that even though that they will be on the east side of the Jordan River, that they are still to follow the Mosaic law. Then I'd like to jump down into chapter 22 and verse 10. And it says, and when they came unto the borders of the Jordan that are in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh built there an altar by Jordan, a great altar to see. 2.5 tribes have built a large altar on the west side that can be seen for a great distance. And then going down to Joshua 22, 16 and 7, it says, thus saith the whole congregation of the Lord, what trespass is this that ye have committed against the God of Israel, to turn away this day from following the Lord, and that ye have builded you an altar that ye might rebel this day against the Lord? Is this the iniquity of Peor too little for us, from which we are not cleansed unto this day, although there was a plague in the congregation of the Lord? What we have happening here is because the 2.5 tribes have built this great altar on the west side, the 9.5 tribes are accusing the 2.5 tribes of building an altar to the Canaanite god Baal. And they remembered what happened to them when they were in the wilderness. And that's back in Numbers chapter 25 and verses 1 through 5, and also Numbers 31, 16, when Balak went to Balaam and he wanted the children of Israel, he wanted Balaam to curse the children of Israel. And God wouldn't allow Balaam to do that. So Balaam found another way to cause the children of Israel to stumble. And he did that by enticing them with the Moabite women, and the men of Israel married the Moabite women. And they started worshiping Baal. And God caused a plague to come upon them where 24,000 of the children of Israel were killed. And they remembered that. And they remembered how serious that was. And they didn't want to repeat the same mistake. So they were really concerned with what the 2.5 tribes had done. And then in Joshua in chapter 22 and verses 21 through 23, it says, "Then the children of Israel, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh answered and said unto the heads of the thousand of Israel, The Lord God of gods, the Lord God of gods, He knoweth, and all Israel He shall know, if it be rebellion or if it be transgression against the Lord, save us not to stay. That we have built us an altar to turn from following the Lord, or if to offer thereon burnt offerings or meat offerings, or if to offer peace offerings thereon, let the Lord Himself require it." Now the 2.5 tribes explain that they did not build the altar as an altar for sacrifice, but as a reminder that they still belong to the nation of Israel. In Joshua 22 and 24, "And if we have not rather done it for fear of this thing, saying, In time to come your children might speak unto our children, saying, What have ye to do with the Lord God of Israel?" They were worried that because the Jordan River divided them, and really the two tribes are divided by the east and the west, and the Jordan River is doing that. Later on they would be divided by the north and the south. You'd have 10 in the north and 2 in the south. But they were worried that their children, because they were on the east side, would not be recognized as children of God by the children on the west side. And then in verse 31, it says, "And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, said unto the children of Reuben, and to the children of Gad, and to the children of Manasseh, This day we perceive that the Lord is among us, because ye have not committed this trespass against the Lord. Now ye have delivered the children of Israel out of the hand of the Lord." And then it says, "And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and the princes returned from the children of Reuben and from the children of Gad and out of the land of Gilead and unto the land of Canaan and the children of Israel and brought them word again. And this thing pleased the children of Israel, and the children of Israel pleased God and did not intend to go up against them to do battle, to destroy the land wherein the children of Reuben and Gad dwelt." You see, this could have been really disastrous if the 9.5 tribes went against the 2.5 tribes, because they could have wiped them out. Can you remember another time in the Bible where that almost happened, where one of the tribes was wiped out? If you read in the book of Joshua, or excuse me, in the book of Judges, where all the tribes went against the tribe of Benjamin and they almost wiped them out. This was a serious thing that was taking place. Now in verse 34 it says, "And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad called the altar Ed, for it shall be a witness between us that the Lord is God." Well, you know, this was an Ed, but Brother Miller, it really wasn't an Ebenezer. And in Exodus 34 and 13 it says, "But ye shall destroy their altars, break their images, and cut down their groves." I think they made an error in constructing this idol. In Deuteronomy 12:27 it says, "And thou shalt offer thy burnt offerings, the flesh and blood, upon the altar of the Lord, and the blood of thy sacrifices shall be poured out upon the altar of the Lord thy God, and thou shalt eat thy flesh." The brazen altar in the tabernacle speaks of Christ's redemptive work and was a place of unity. It was a place where they were to make their sacrifices. You see, the altar speaks of the death of Jesus as a sacrifice, where there was to be atonement. 2.5 tribes have built a bloodless altar. In my opinion, they have strayed from the truth. And Matthew says, "Yet, or ye shall know them by their fruits." God wanted centralized worship, and they were not under a divine command to do this. And then in 1 Thessalonians, it says, "Abstain from all the appearances of evil." I want to mention one more thing because I believe my time is up. But further proof of that would be if you go and you look in Luke in chapter 8 and you read about when Jesus crossed over the sea into the land of the Gadarenes. And the Gadarenes, what were they doing? Well, they were in the pig business, because Jesus caused the devils that were in legion to go into the pigs, And it wasn't Jesus who killed the pigs. It was the devils who ran off into the water and they drowned. But the people got mad at Jesus and they asked him to leave. And it was a terrible, terrible thing when you think about this, because they were more concerned about those pigs than they were their brethren who was healed. But yet Jesus was knocking at their door and they turned him away. So in my opinion, from the last two things that I read about the altar and about when Jesus crossed the Sea of Galilee and he went over to the land of the Gadarenes, the 2.5 tribes were on the wrong side of the Jordan River. They had crossed a line that they shouldn't have. I want to thank you for your time and your patience.